The Guardian. Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. As the clocks go back and the cold nights draw in, the politics of energy is hotting up, and with it, a struggle to define a new relationship with the market economy. Former Tory PM John Major appeared to side with Ed Miliband this week against the gas and electricity providers, while David Cameron risks being left out in the cold. Also this week, how free should a free school be? With a scandal hit faith school shuttered in Derby, an intervention by Nick Clegg about who should be allowed to teach threatens to divide the coalition. And please wait while we connect you. Has the United States really been listening into Chancellor Merkel's mobile phone? Joining me for all of this, we have our social affairs editor, Randeep Ramesh, our political correspondent, Rowena Mason, and Spectator columnist and political writer, Melissa Kite. Welcome to you all. Now, at what point does meddling in markets make you a Marxist? When Ed Miliband promised to freeze energy prices if he gets elected, he was lambasted from many on the right as the man stuck in the struggles of socialist utopianism. That was until this week, when former Prime Minister Sir John Major took his own pot shot at big energy. Meanwhile, it emerged that hedge funds have been snapping up thousands of shares in Royal Mail after its frenzied flotation, amid accusations that the government let it go far too cheaply. And is there a new agenda about standing up for the little guy against powerful interests? Rowena, you were there watching Prime Minister's questions this week. The consensus seemed to be that Ed Miliband did rather well after John Major's unhelpful intervention as far as both Big Energy and David Cameron were concerned.
Yes, it's very interesting. Ed Miliband really seems to have got David Cameron on the back foot over all this energy stuff. His promise to freeze prices for 20 months if he becomes Prime Minister in 2015. And the Conservatives, at some point in David Cameron's tenure as Prime Minister, he's actually made a similar argument to Ed Miliband about that we should go back to a moral capitalism, that no true Conservative believes that politicians should step back and let capitalism let rip. But his response to Ed Miliband has been to characterise this intervention in markets as a return to old socialism. And so he's really undone all this work that he'd done in sort of 2010, 2011, saying that we shouldn't go for full-blown predatory capitalism, and got himself into a little bit of a hole over it. And with John Major's intervention about saying that there should be a windfall tax on energy companies, he doesn't really know what to do. And so he came out with this sort of on-the-hoof pronouncement about rowing back on green taxes, and that doesn't seem to have gone down very well.
What do you think, Melissa? Are we in for a big, long, sustained era of corporation kicking?
Yeah, see, I slightly disagree that it's a problem for the Tories, or need be a problem for the Tory party intervening in the energy market. See, I think when a problem like this impacts on middle Britain, you know, you've got a really good excuse to intervene. I mean, the fact is that John Major is right, and I loved his intervention because it was absolutely bang on the money for speaking up for hard-pressed Britons. I mean, virtually nobody can afford their gas bill at the minute. It's absolutely ridiculous. And these energy firms are making millions and millions of pounds out of essentially overcharging us for our gas and electricity. Something has to be done. So we deregulated the market and we had all these energy firms, and you're meant to be able to switch and, you know, customer power and all the rest of it. And we know for a fact it doesn't work. As soon as you switch, the other one puts their prices up. And these guys, they've got it made. You know, they've got it absolutely made. So they've been given the chance to behave well in a deregulated market, and they're taking the you-know-what. So, yes, something has to be done. And when Ed Miliband called for regulation in his speech to the conference, I actually found myself, as a centre-right person, sort of vaguely a Tory, thinking, yes, go for it. This is what we want. So if I find myself thinking that, John Major says that, surely the argument has come around to the fact that this is the one issue where you can actually stand up for essentially you know, customers. And, you know, this has got completely out of hand. Yes, we need to intervene. Deregulation of these industries, everybody knows, hasn't worked for the customer.
Interesting. I mean, Randeep, do you think this is a one-off, a kind of failure of whether it's the competition or the supply to bring down prices on energy bills, or do you think we're seeing something wider going on? I mean, I'm thinking of Royal Mail as well.
I think there is definitely something wider going on. What failed really was Cameron's, and he's a very adroit politician, so I'm surprised at this, is he has failed to recognise that the centre-left has moved from a tax and redistribution agenda to a failure of market agenda. That's been the shift in policy. For the left, the left has basically said rising inequality, too many people at the top making too much money, and they are essentially rentist extracting. They're not providing anything economically useful, and they're just living off the rest of us. And the energy companies are that made real, if you like. So they have charged the energy companies, the Labour Party, with excess profits, i.e. making money for no good reason out of ordinary people like you and me. The traditional response would have been to, say, demand a competition commission inquiry. That's how you break up, you know, concentrations of power in capitalism. Ed Miliband's cleverer than that. He said, no, that's not going to win me any headlines. What I'll do is something very eye-catching. I'm going to say the market is bust. I'm going to fix it and you're not going to pay for it. And that's what's worked. That is a wider symptom of a Tory problem identified by David Skelton in Renewal and by the lace curtain conservatism of John Major, who both recognise that the little guy shouldn't need to get, you know, done over by politicians.
That's very clever. There's always been a strong element of conservative ism in the Conservative Party that is small businesses and suspicious of big supermarkets, for example, hasn't
there? Absolutely. Tories who hanker after the golden era of John Major, which wasn't obviously golden. The reason why people sort of look fondly on a Conservative leader who knew what it was like to be poor and who kind of stood up for the little guy is, well, because he stood up for the little guy. You know, there is a strain of conservatism, one nation conservatism, which now Ed Miliband's now nicking the brand, that does precisely that and is obsessed with small business and helping people make something of themselves. And I think John Major's suggestion that we stick a windfall tax on these guys is just fair enough in a way. It's a solution, isn't it? Because if they're making millions out of the ordinary people, then maybe they should pay the tax. Certainly, the ordinary people who are struggling to pay their gas bill shouldn't be paying green taxes, I don't think. Shouldn't be. You know, let's make the big guys pay those taxes.
But, you know, the important thing there was John Major actually answered the criticism from Cameron. Cameron sort of said, but these companies will go bust. They've got nothing to invest. John Major simply says, but they can do what all companies have done time immemorial. They borrow. Simple. You borrow to invest. It doesn't seem anything very difficult in that. See, and I thought that was quite an interesting intervention from him in that the Royal Mail is exactly the same problem. You hear you've got hedge funds, concentrations of power, making excess profits. That's what that plays into this particular public pitchfork mood, you know, that we have against sort of the rich. Are they really making it fairly?
It's certainly a better idea than telling customers to put on a jumper, isn't it?
Right, Davey did this week. I mean, there's been other stories around as well that have given rise to a bit of an anti-business mood. So there's the Grange Mills, which as we speak may or may not be closing, but certainly things aren't looking good there, with a bitter standoff between union management and yesterday's announcement that it would be closed. And also, interestingly, earlier in the week, nuclear power, where it said that Britain is going to get nuclear power, but only because French and Chinese businesses have been lured in. Do you think, Rowena, that there's an agenda here for someone who wants a politician is prepared to say that government's going to get more of a direct grip on industry?
I don't think that's the mood of where David Cameron is going. He seems to have gone down this line of anti-state interventionism with regard to the energy companies, and it might not have been his doctrine in the past, but he seems to be characterising this as a very socialist mindset and not something that the Tories are going to be prepared to do. I mean, they've said very firmly that it's not the government's job to bail out Grangemouth and they'll try and help however they can, but they won't stick their oar in with it, whereas the Scottish government seems to be taking a slightly different approach, and Alex Salmond's been on the phone to both sides all the time. It just seems to be the mood of Number 10 that they won't be interventionist.
Meddling will only make it worse.
Yes, although conversely, they are enormously subsidising nuclear power through everybody's bills. So this argument that the state doesn't get involved in regulation and profits and companies is actually quite fallacious.
Maybe part of the reason for this anti-business mood, if there is one, Melissa, is that, of course, we've had very bad business news for a very long time. George Osborne, David Cameron have probably already seen the figures on GDP that are about to come out, which everyone's expecting will be better. Do you think in a year's time, if the economy's picked up and got 3 or 4% growth, do you think people will still be anti-business?
Well, they could be, because how is the economy picking up? The problem now is, yes, we're going to get better figures, but we know that this growth is happening mainly in London and the southeast of England at the moment. They are soaring ahead. Where we're sitting now, you know, the buildings are going up, it's all bustling, everything looks good. People are definitely coming out of recession in London and the southeast. What is happening in the rest of Britain is still unclear, and certainly this attack that Ed Miliband has, whose recovery is it anyway? I think is very, very apposite. It's going to chime with a lot of people in this country who are seeing, you know, the top, you know, ironically enough, you know, the very sector who got us into this mess, the banking sector, they're booming again. You know, but what about the poor people who are impacted on? When are they going to get a bit of this recovery? That is not clear.
That's exactly what John Major was saying with his characterisation of lace curtain poverty, and saying that there is no national party at the moment. The Conservatives are not having, you know, they don't have enough of an impact in the north, and Labour don't have enough of an impact in the south.
And the so-called cost of living crisis, Randy, which basically means that wages have been going up more slowly than prices. Still, whatever's happening to the GDP figures, that doesn't seem to be correcting itself yet, does it? I mean, it will in the end, though, I guess.
No. I mean, the secular trend, both in the United States and modern industrialized economies, is for productivity gains not to be booked by workers. So your wages, the median wage falls, stagnates, while GDP rises, as more of the return goes to capital, if you like, than to labor in the old Marxist dogma. And that's bad news. I mean, that's about really the sorts of country we're building. And I think it does play to this idea of a divided Britain. A country for those people who are gaining from the system and those who aren't. And you're seeing increasing numbers of people who aren't gaining from it. We have to really rethink the kind of industries we're going to build for the future. I don't think David Cameron doesn't understand that. I think he plainly does. And in academics I've talked to who have walked into 10 Downing Street with one view have walked out saying, look, these guys get it. They're just, what they do about it is their problem.
Well, let's leave that there. You can continue the debate on our blog at theguardian.com/politic. Now, we spoke a lot last week about the ongoing revelations that have so damaged the US intelligence gathering services, but this week's story out of Germany is surely one of the biggest yet. Angela Merkel has called Barack Obama personally following allegations that the US has been monitoring her mobile phone. Well, Philip Altman is our Berlin correspondent, and I asked him, how's this gone down?
It's been, I think, a fairly dramatic reaction to it today. If you, I mean, just this morning, the Defense Minister, Thomas de Maizière, told reporters that Washington and Berlin couldn't go back to business as usual, and that they immediately needed to clear up whether these allegations were true or not. Since then, the foreign minister has called in the UN ambassador to his office, which I think is, I mean, some people are saying that hasn't happened since 1945. It's fairly unusual, given that normally conflicts like that are resolved between diplomats. So I think it's a real step change. I mean, the criticism isn't just of Obama. I mean, the Deutsche Zeitung is very outspoken. They've said Barack Obama is not a Nobel Peace Prize winner. He's a troublemaker. I mean, so there's a lot of criticism of Obama, but also the criticism is of Merkel, who was seen to be, to be very reserved in her criticism of the whole scandal in the past. Her chief of staff only recently said that the NSA scandal was, quote, over. And people are saying, well, you know, now you're changing your tune, that they're bugging your own mobile. So, it certainly feels like this is a significant moment.
And it's kind of leading the news and everything, is it?
That's right, yeah.
America and Germany aren't going to cease being allies, are they?
No, of course they won't. But I think one shouldn't underestimate the depth of disappointment in America and in Britain here. I mean, at a political level, maybe that will take a while to filter down, but I think the public perception of America and Britain has really, taken a knock here. The US and Britain used to be, for a long time, historically, in the post-war period, were blueprints for Germany and how to do how to do media, how to do democracy, and so on. So I think that sense now that, you know, these people that we admire, that we thought were our friends, have been bugging us, I think is a really a crushing realization.
Gosh, so big stuff. Meanwhile, you do have a chancellor, of course, even if she's being listened in on, but it's not clear to a British audience whether you've got a government, or at least a settled government yet.
Yeah, no, it's by no means very easy to follow. So, for example, even the foreign minister who's called on the ambassador, Guido Westerwelle, he's only really foreign minister by name. I mean, he's not going to, with the new government, he's going to be out because he's from the Free Democrats and they're no longer in parliament. The coalition negotiations here, have been going on for, a month and a half. It's looking very likely that there will be a grand coalition, so-called, between the Merkel's CDU and the Social Democrats. But they're only this week started the formal stage where ministers from each section start talking to each other about policy detail. This is going to go on for a while, I'm afraid. There'll probably be a vote amongst the SPD, Social Democrat members, when they have their next summit. So, I'm afraid there might not be a German government for a while yet.
Oh, well, I wonder if Nick Clegg's thinking he rushed it listening to that. Thanks very much, Philip Altman in Berlin. Now, David Cameron and Nick Clegg sat down to lunch earlier this week to thrash out exactly why the Liberal Democrats appear to have abandoned their previous support for Michael Gove's free schools. As we record, Nick Clegg is set to deliver a speech in which he'll be calling for minimum standards to be guaranteed in all schools, whether they be free or not. Rowena, what's going on here? What is the subtext? I remember before the election, Nick Clegg, I thought, he's quite interested in links with the Conservatives Party because he was saying that he liked the idea of having more autonomous schools and the pupil premium. Shared language with Michael Gove on some of this stuff. He's got his own man in the ministry, hasn't he, David Laws? And yet now he doesn't like the policy.
Yes, well, Nick Clegg's been trying to pretend that this has been his stance all along. He points back to the Liberal Democrats spring conference where they passed a motion saying that they wanted free schools to submit to minimum standards on qualified teachers. But there has been a definite shift in language over this weekend with Nick Clegg coming out very hard and saying he wants all free schools to conform to a national curriculum, have teachers who are qualified or working towards a qualification, and to have the same standards in healthy school meals. And the reason this jarred so much is perhaps because David Laws, the Lib Dems schools minister, had only a few days beforehand been defending schools without qualified teachers in the House of Commons. The way that Nick Clegg's getting around this is saying that it's perfectly possible for the Lib Dems to have their own party policy that's distinct from government policy, and David Laws was simply defending the government line in the House of Commons. But I'm not sure how much that will wash with the voters. I don't think that they'll see these kind of distinctions.
But I mean, there's a real question, isn't there, about, I mean, how many months have they got left now? 20-odd months till the general election. And we've also got Nick Clegg saying this morning on the Green tariffs, green energy stuff. David Cameron's latest moves on this are not something I quite agree with. He was so careful for so long, unlike, say, Vince Cable, to sort of say, you know, these were two parties working together in the national interest. Now it's quite obvious that they're two parties working together, working apart in their own electoral interest. Do you think they can keep the show on the road through to May 2015?
Well, I think that Nick Clegg is trying a bit of differentiation, as they put it, and it seems to be a bit earlier than the Tories might have liked. I think that the Tories wanted to keep a united front for a bit longer, But Nick Clegg seems to be going for it. He's I mean, you could see it in the recent reshuffle where he got rid of a right-leaning Lib Dem Home Office Minister, Jeremy Brown, and put in a very left-leaning Lib Dem Home Office Minister, Norman Baker. And I think there is a bit more of an attempt to appeal to some of those voters on the left that they might have lost over the last few years from being in coalition.
Guardian readers run deep. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, to watch this? I mean, Nick Clegg has pushed his party very hard to being a party, as he'd say, at the centre. Some people would say the centre-right, a party of government above all, rather than a party of protest. And now he's protesting from within government.
Yeah, I mean, interesting enough, I think it was a reaction to the arrival of Tristram Hunt and Labour's kind of acceptance that free schools are here to stay, and to reverse them when you arrive would just cause a headache. I think Tristram Hunt is quite interesting because we've seen somebody who's a very telegenic, tall, good-looking politician, speaks well on telly. I mean, someone who could be a future leader. I think it reduces the scope for Miliband in a way. He's got to win the next election because we are seeing the arrival of a new guard in the Labour Party. So that's where I think the problem lies for Labour Party. For the Lib Dems to respond, they're just trying to move to the left of Labour. That's simple. I mean, their criticism, if it was to be made, should be made at the time. You can't then sort of turn the clock back and say, oh, we did have quite a few problems on this. I think the only thing that I would say is the public wouldn't see really much of a distinction between the Labour Party and the Lib Dems on this, because they both kind of know they have problems with it, and they'll both arrive and produce their own version of free schools. I mean, it just seems a sort of slightly artificial debate and a response, really, to where Labour have moved.
I mean, I suppose no one is going to follow... very few people will follow the detail of this outside the education sector, will they? But I think people do notice, maybe, if it sounds like the government's fighting among itself.
They definitely do. The thing about free schools, Michael Gove has managed the stats really well. Toby Young trots out this line. Toby Young, obviously, free school evangelist, trots out this line that 75% of free schools are good or outstanding. He neglects to say that there are only 24 free schools in that sample, as opposed to the 19,000 other schools that we've got to offset us to... look at. So, you know, the stats have been managed well. They haven't been that many failures. There haven't been that many free schools.
Melissa, you wrote something on the substance rather than just the politics of this, saying that Nick Clegg got it right.
Yes, I sort of instinctively don't like free schools because I feel that there are two options if you're a parent with kids deciding how to educate them. You either put them into a state school, which we've all paid for with our taxes, which is fair enough, or if you don't like that, you pay for it yourself and you send them to a private school. What it seems to me that what I would call pushy parents who are setting up free schools are doing is sort of opting out of the state system and not putting their money where their mouth is and paying for it themselves. So we, the taxpayer, continue to fund them to opt out and get the sort of specialist education they want, which they don't want to pay for. I also think if you're wanting to improve the state system, which we all, you know, as a country do, if you take your children out of it, the loss of that sort of pushy parent element from that system is a problem. I think they should stay within the state system and fight to improve that. So I'm a little bit sort of troubled about the whole free school principle, I think.
So you're saying you worry that the drawing out of people not just into private schools but into free schools is a diversion of, I don't know, middle class agitation and energy.
Yes, of course. I mean, if this takes off, and as you say, there's only a handful of them at the minute, but if this takes off, you can see the way it goes, that people who are pushing for higher standards leave the state system and push for them in their own little patch, and they create their own little sort of ghettos of excellence, if you want to say. I don't know, but this just seems to me to be going the wrong way. Why is the taxpayer picking up the bill for a school which, like the Almedina, or essentially schools which parents are setting up to sort of get exactly what they want and not following the standards set down by the national curriculum.
I mean,
curriculum
my heart's with Melissa on this, but my head, I could imagine Gove, the Tories coming in and saying, we've got a baby boom, lots of kids arriving at school, we've got to build schools, we've got no money, there's no money left, boss. And what do? They find a cut-bright version, partly based on the energy of kind of pushy parents, as Melissa says, and we get free schools. As this kind of good sort of conservative big society, you know, banding together, let's solve the problem without spending loads of state money. I think, and I do agree, I think the problem is a problem of segregation. In essence, we self-segregate out of it because our kids are all right because we've set up this nice school and they get Latin or whatever it is, Mandarin.
But I mean, isn't there another problem here, which is that if it becomes too successful and too many people set up schools, then there might not be enough money left to provide places in other parts of the country that don't have enough places at the moment. There's a lot of talk about a lack of primary school places, for example, Rowena, in London. Do you think this sort of practical question about planning places is going to become a big problem for the government in the run-up to the election?
I think this is a major criticism that Labour has levelled at the government, that free schools are being set up in the wrong places. So parents can basically set up a free school wherever they like and Michael Gove will bite their hand off because he wants more free schools. So I think it could become more of a problem if Labour keep pushing at that door. On the other hand, they have a problem of their own about, you know, how whether they're going to support the principle of free schools, however they name it or not. I mean, Tristan Hunt, the new education secretary, his shadow education secretary, has rowed back on his previous criticism of free schools as being simply for yummy mummies and said that Labour will look at doing something similar but different, shall we say.
Well, there's more on all of this at theguardian.com/education. My thanks to Rowena Mason, Melissa Kite and Randeep Ramesh. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Tom Clark and thanks very much indeed for listening.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.